Hey guys, welcome back to the Mid-Minimals podcast, episode 32. I'm Gage.
I'm Isaac.
And I'm Brody.
And today we have a special guest, Eric Gullickson from WBI TV5. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Now a word from our sponsor.
Okay, so how's everyone doing this week? We have a special guest, like I had said, Eric from TV5. He is a sportscaster on TV5. How are you doing today, all of you?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, how you doing, Isaac?
I've been starting to drive on my own, which is pretty cool. Big step up.
Wow.
So I've been doing pretty good. And I graduated, so.
Yes, congratulations, hey. Isaac. So we have a special guest on this week, like we had mentioned, Eric Gullickson. He's a sportscaster at TV5. So nice to meet you, Eric. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet all you guys.
So we wanted to start talking about, you know, how you started at TV5, and, you know, your come up and how you got involved in media broadcasting, journalism and all that. So, would you mind sharing your story on how you started?
Wait. First, I let him describe what his, like, full job is. Like, what is the full extent of what he does?
Sure, guys. You know, a lot of people think I have a lot of people working with me, but, since coronavirus hit, I am the only person doing sports at my station. So basically find content, go get it, bring it back, put it together, and get it on the air by deadlines for 6, 10, and 11 o'clock newscasts every day.
Oh, wow. Right.
You're very busy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the pandemic kind of slowed everything down and made it about finding content more than there's so much content trying to figure out what to go get that is the most important thing for that day. So it changed.
A lot of sports stopped because of COVID. So that must have really affected your schedule broadcasting and as far as reporting on the sports.
Yeah, it became more about the people, which is what I try to do is find people stories that can relate to everybody. So that kind of took over instead of what's going on in this league or high school sports or college sports or, you know, even what's going on in New England with the Red Sox or Bruins or Celtics or Patriots.
Now, prior to COVID, was this done by a team of people or were you always the one kind of sorting through all the incoming information and different things and having to figure out what to broadcast?
Prior to COVID, we have a 2-person sports team. So, I would still pretty much finding everything. I have a sports reporter. His name is Brian Seidlinger, and he is from Damariscotta, Maine, originally. And he would come in and help me out. We both would tackle all the stuff we needed to gather. He'd full guns blazing all the time. He's really into it. So it's been nice to have him. And it's been a chance for me to kind of learn how to be the boss. I've always been the second in command until this job. So
that's good.
Been a growing thing. Yeah.
How did you get involved with it? Like, did you know someone at the studio or how did you get involved in the whole broadcasting and all that?
Well, I went to University of Maine and I worked in Bangor, a very long time ago, right out of college. And, ended up going back to where I'm originally from in Minnesota and working for a while, learning how to do sports. And just happened that a sports job opened up in Bangor and I really missed Maine and was looking for a chance to come back. And it just happened to work out that way.
Nice.
Yeah, Maine's a great state. COVID's really affected a lot of people, including, you know, news, as you had said, and all that. Just a question for you. How long do you think this whole thing is going to go on until sports start opening back up fully?
Well, it sounds like they're going to try to open up next month. And in the major sports, I mean, around the world, they've already started. And it seems to be going okay. This week, pro soccer starts overseas. And that'll be a big test, I think, or the major sports here. Can they do it? Can they keep people, you know, from coming down with this? And then if it works over there, then possibly the NBA and the NHL will be able to do what they plan to do.
Well, that's nice. It's nice that you have, or that America has someone else doing all the figuring out for them in this one.
I guess that's one way to look at it, but it, also everybody had it before us too. So we're just kind of following that trend. That's the way I see it anyways.
Right.
We kind of followed, and now they've kind of cleared that. And I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to clear this too and get somewhat back to being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it.
You said you went to college for this job. Were you always planning on being a sportscaster, or were you more looking just anything news related sort of deal?
Yeah, it kind of was an evolution. I really wanted to be a play-by-play person when I went to college. And then it evolved into, I thought I really wanted to do news, and I really was interested in what was going on at the time in the Middle East and covering that. And then the more I delved into it about thoughts of possibly having a life around my job and not just my job was the entirety of my life, I went back to some, I've always been passionate about sports. So it kind of,
it just clicked, kind of deal.
Yeah, it brought it back to that. Yeah,
you cover a lot of different sports from around the world. So how do you, you know, find these stories? Are you individually watching all these games, or are you doing like research on stats and all that, or how do you usually get your story together?
We try to remain as local as possible. A lot of stuff at local high schools around our region that people get us on Channel 5, and there's a lot of different ways to get stories, and most of it is just going to these different schools and meeting people and doing, you know, stories about people or teams that are successful. And from those stories, a lot of the time people will say, oh, by the way, did you hear about so-and-so is going to Africa next month to like help feed children? And you're like, what? And then okay.
So it's a chain reaction of information. You get in, you have like a source, and then typically that will lead to other sorts of sources and ideas.
Occasionally, yeah. And, you know, you make connections with covering people, and, you know, they'll add me on social media, or I'll follow them on social media too. And a lot of times that's the way, I mean, just end up getting, hey, guess what I'm doing? I'm going to do this or that or the other thing, or I just won All-American, or I'm, you know, whatever. And
yeah,
and go talk to them about it. And just, it's all about sharing what's going on with people that would be interesting to people. And hopefully you do find that really in-depth story, but sometimes it's just, this is a really cool accomplishment that's very rare.
Yeah, no, hey, that is really cool. So as far as, you know, getting context and all that and finding sources, so you just usually, it's like word of mouth, connections, all that, right?
It's just like anything. It's networking. It's, you know, connecting with people. A lot of times, as you guys, if you're from Maine, know, a lot of the faces stay the same for a long time. So
yeah,
making connections with people that over the years, and eventually they respect you enough that they understand that you're there for the right reasons and you're not there to just burn people. And they realize that you're trying to showcase the kids and give them some coverage that people want to see.
So you were mentioning about, you know, your job and not having it be your entire life. So how do you like separate your life from, you know, your journalism job at, you know, sportcasting and everything else? How do you do that?
That is a tremendously great question. It's taken a long time because, like anybody, you want to put everything you have into it. So how does that happen? I mean, sports is 24/7 now. News is 24/7. The world is 24/7. So how do you unplug? And it's taken me a long time. I learned a lot from the guy that had my job before me, Tim Throckmorton, who was here for a long, long time. And just, you have to separate and do the things that you love in your free time, and then check back in and be like, okay, what's going on? Did I miss something? And just check in and then go back to doing other stuff, but
so is finding stuff to talk about kind of always on your mind, even when you're trying to not do work?
I would say that it used to be, and now I try to, when I am not at work, focus on other things and then catch back up when I get sure. back to work.
Are you how many hours a day are you spending on getting your stories ready for broadcast?
I'd like to tell you I only worked 8 hours, but most days it's 12-hour days just finding information. And then, you know, work an 8-hour normal shift. But in the current situation, a lot of it is working before the 6 o'clock news to gather, and then work ahead so that you kind of have some information. Maybe it's not going to be the day of, maybe you're going to run it the next day. So at least you have, you know, some content. In a normal situation, you have so much stuff, so many games going on to cover, so many things happening. Somebody sets a record or some team is doing something that the school has never done before, or, you know, just stuff happens every day and we're just not in that right now.
Yeah. It seems busy. I know there's a lot of different, basketball seasons. There's a lot of different games going on between schools and it's hard to cover that and everything else. So are you running the same story for all different, you know, the 6 a.m. news, the 5 p.m., the 6 p.m. news, and the 11 o'clock news, or are you guys doing different stories?
It depends on the day. A lot of it is rerun. You know, it's just where we're at. In the wintertime, during basketball and hockey season, we were actually able to pretty much have whole new newscasts at 10 and 11. That were different from our six. And a lot of the 10 and 11, we tape our morning show at night because there's not a whole lot that happens in Maine overnight. Every once in a while, something will happen in sports overnight, but it's pretty rare. And so a lot of our morning sports is just a quick tape segment that we put together at night.
Oh, is the whole morning show pre-recorded?
No, the whole morning show is not. Just the little sports segment that we do. It's about, there's 2 1-minute quick, almost like a radio show read for morning sports.
Yeah. So you guys are also, it's kind of interesting. You guys are both on TV5, Channel 5, and then the CW. You guys have your news on that channel as well.
Yeah, our station owns the CW. They picked that up a while ago. And so, yeah, our 10 o'clock news and our 11 o'clock news are pretty similar on the two affiliates.
And you guys are, your parent company is Gray Media, right?
Yes, Gray bought us probably 2.5-3 years ago. And they have really expanded. They're the third largest media company in the country right now.
I heard they were being bought out by a bigger company that was going to absorb like News Center Made and the NBC channels as well. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, Gray was thinking about Tegna. There was talks, but I don't think I don't know what happened with it. It's way above my pay grade.
So how many average viewers are you guys getting per broadcast?
I think it's 50,000 households. So we're the top station in the Bangor market, and then Portland has its own market. Presque Isle's off by itself.
Yeah, I mean, so in Maine, there's Fox 22, News Center Maine, and TV5, and I've always watched TV5. I think it's pretty cool. But yeah, no, there's a lot of changes. A lot. There was I forget his name now. The news anchor, he had retired, I think in January.
Jim Morris.
Yeah. He was on there for a very long time. It's funny. You have these journalists. They're kind of local celebrities. You know, they're on the news every night. It is
a little different. Jim's a great guy. He's a super funny guy, and he actually loves baseball. And I had to be careful with my times around him because I would talk baseball, and then we would be talking for like an hour, and then I would be in trouble trying to get stuff together. But he's definitely missed. Really a great guy, and I know a lot of people like watching him on the news.
It's a shame that he left. But have you ever had anyone come up to you and say, "Oh, that's Eric Gullickson from from the TV?
Just my friends mess with me with that sometimes. They'll be like, oh, Eric Gullickson, sports anchor, is here. Look at that. But usually what happens is people just kind of look at me because I kind of dress differently than on air when I usually have a baseball hat on. And
casual.
They try to figure out where the heck they know me from. And then they figure it out later or something. But I get those confused looks.
Oh, sure. Kind of a different question. When you're reporting things, when you're reporting anything, how much of it is improv, just kind of working with what you're previously talking about, and how much of it is teleprompter reading that you've pre-prepared or something like that?
When I'm reporting in the field, like
anything really,
in studio or on field,
In the studio, everything's in the teleprompter. In the field, there are apps you can put on your phone to have that's basically a teleprompter, but it kind of looks weird because you're looking down at your phone the whole time. Most of that you try to memorize. And
it would kind of look like a high school kid trying to talk in front of his class, and he has a bunch of note cards in his hands.
That's exactly it. Yeah, you would look like that high school student for sure.
Do you prefer the teleprompter, or do you prefer being fluent, you know, and pulling it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's two different things. I don't really mind it in the field. My first job, I mean, my boss was there for, I don't know, 30, 40 years, and he was just a gem. And he, everything was chicken scratch written out. So we basically ad-libbed everything, even our newscast. So that's where I kind of learned to just kind of wing it.
Yeah, that sounds like it really would kind of beat you into shape.
Yeah, he was something else. He was a great guy. But it just depends. I've noticed that it's weird for me now to kind of do those reports when people are watching, because even though, like, you know, people are watching you on TV, there's not actual like people there staring at you while you're trying to do stuff. So that sometimes takes a second to get reused to, like that kid in the front of the high school class.
So as far as, you know, the studio goes, do they all use teleprompters, or how much of that is, improv?
Pretty much everything in studio is on a teleprompter. At least some portion of it is written out for people to read straight. Anything in the field, we just don't have the technology where we would have teleprompters on our cameras in the field. Some stations do. The major news networks, I believe, have reporter cameras with teleprompters on them to make it cleaner. It's just easier when you got something in front of you.
Because it doesn't put you on the spot as much. It seems more fluent and people like that. But yeah, that's pretty cool. So how does I actually have a question about your how your station runs. So how do you guys like flip-flop between CBS programming and TV5 programming? How does that all work?
Oh, sure. Well, our local programming is our newscast, so we have slots each day through our master control in the back that switches it over for us. And then we go back to regular CBS programming, which we have a contract with them. Our station has a contract with CBS National to air all that stuff. And then, you know, flip of a switch, it goes back to TV5 local news.
I should have been more specific, but, you know, as far as like advertising, so you'll be watching a CBS broadcast, and then there'll be a local ad, and then there'll be a national ad, and et cetera, et cetera. How does that all work? Is there someone in the booth, like,
yes,
constantly switching between them?
Yes, there is. And it's not really switching between them. All of our commercial breaks are pre-programmed in. So we have national news that national ads they sell, as well as local ads for various time slots, and everything is all kind of packaged, I guess is the way to say it.
How does news get sorted? Like, obviously you guys will report all local news, but how much of what you guys report national news? Like you guys sort of sort information, right?
Yeah.
Like, you guys will have some national news that you report on. How does that work?
We have national news feeds that we get from, we subscribe to both CNN, the Associated Press, and we also subscribe to the CBS NewsPath feed. So they'll send down stories, or they'll request stories from us if we have a big enough, like Donald Trump was in Maine yesterday. We sent all of that stuff to CBS National and also CNN. And also our Gray National has its own thing for all the Gray television stations, that if they wanted to access that stuff, then they could run that.
So, like, you know, you have your affiliate channels. Do you share stories and like footage from other news outlets, like local news outlets as well?
Yeah, we actually, us and the Presque Isle station are both owned by Gray. So we've had that connection with them for as long as I've been here. And we also have a sister, I guess you'd call it like a broadcast partner, with WMTW in Portland, Channel 8. Because News Center went statewide, everyone had to kind of figure out how to compete with that. And we share with Presque Isle and Portland. So we have the whole state covered as well.
Anyone, anywhere you are in Maine, you can access the Channel 5. Is that how that works, or is it just specific areas?
We cut off around the Augusta Gardner area to the south. We go 2 hours east and west, and we go up to Aroostook County border, but Presque Isle is on in Aroostook County. Our CW station does go up to all the way up to Fort Kent and Madawaska, but Portland kind of takes from Augusta area south.
Now a word from our sponsor.
A lot of entertainment, a lot of viewership has switched to more online things. Do you feel, or have you noticed, like a feeling of pressure in your stations from the big shift to everything being digital? Or do you not think that's really going to affect your guys' station?
It won't really affect us, but at the same time, we've made a huge push to be more digital and be more interactive with social media and our website, to just constant. It's really changed the way that I have to do my job and be more instant in everything. Because that's what people expect now.
Yeah, so much is switching over to like YouTube, for instance. You know, you have small news companies like you know, the Young Turks and Steven Crowder, and those individual, you know, the Daily Wire and companies like that, who post their clips directly to YouTube and their stories. Has that hurt you guys in any sense?
I'm not sure that it has, because we're such a rural, small Maine place. And we are completely local for the most part. I mean, we will show some national stories, but we do have the nightly national news. For the most part, we're very, very local. And, you know, one of the stations in Bangor is probably, or the newspapers in this region are the only places you're probably going to find the stuff we cover.
So News Center Maine went fully statewide. What does that exactly mean?
They broadcast from they even go into New Hampshire, but they broadcast covering the whole state.
So you guys have a contract with CBS, obviously. Is that like always going to be a thing, or like, is that continued, or how does that work? Do you guys have like a 20-year contract, or is it like, you know, a few years at a time?
You know, I know that they have to renew it because they had to do it while I was here, and it was quite a battle that my old general manager was pretty stressed out about, coming up with the money to do that. I don't know the term of it. I think it's by 5 or 10 years, but I'm not entirely sure. But it's a recurring thing where they have negotiations to keep connected.
Yeah. As long as I've watched it, it's always been CBS. So I didn't realize that they had any sort of, you know, deals with that. But I mean, I know that, you know, the other channels is NBC. So it'd be pretty weird to have two NBC channels or whatever. I don't know. That's just, I don't know. But it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool stuff.
I think that once Gray took over our company, I don't think we're very much I don't think we're worried about being able to stay a CBS affiliate going forward.
How was it like switching over to Gray Media? Like, what was their interest in the local stations?
They are interested in getting the top stations in as many markets as they can possibly have.
Has it affected you guys, you know, the way you worked? Do they have any creative problems as far as like running the news? Do they have a lot of say in how it works?
They have given some input on things that work in markets similar to ours. But a lot of it is, you know, kind of letting us go. And they see that we're successful and they'll offer tips that they learn, because we have markets that are in major cities too, and stuff that's working there might transcend to ours. So it's been different because we came from a company that owned two stations in the country. And then we moved to one that I think they're up over 100 stations now. Last time I checked.
So Gray Media's goal is just to kind of become a news center conglomerate sort of deal, just to acquire stations and grow to be a bigger company.
They want to be the media news leader is the goal. I mean, that's what is set out, and it's to be the best. And they decided that if they're able to acquire stations that are the best, that they can move closer to that goal.
That's pretty cool that they, you know, I don't know. It's pretty cool to think that, you know, small local news stations are owned by big companies like that. That's pretty interesting. I mean, I think that's cool. Who owned you guys before Gray Media?
It was Diversified Communications, which they originally were like a trade show company. And they happened to purchase a couple of TV stations, and it worked out that we made them a lot of money so that they could keep going around the country and having their trade show.
How do you just get into the buying a news station?
Yeah.
I'm just going to buy a station.
Yeah. It was the 50s. So, I mean, I think we started in the 50s, and we had our 60th anniversary a few years ago. It just was, hey, TV could be a thing. And then people were like, yeah, let's try this. And so they did.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting how things started out? Yeah, you guys turned, like you said, 60. They did I don't know if this was the 50th anniversary or the 60th, but they sold these DVDs of old advertisements that they used to play.
Yeah.
From like the 80s.
Yeah.
And I bought it, and I have it. It's very cool to watch them because they're just so old.
Yeah. The archives are incredible. Finding some of the old stuff. And I really appreciate him because, like, Rock was there for so long, and Jim and Chris Ewing, who's still our meteorologist, just seeing them when they were like my age and younger, like way back in the 80s, was like just amazing.
So how do you guys, you have an archive. Do you record and store every newscast on some sort of system?
Sort of. Yeah. We have to mark, we usually do it by stories, and they get archived into a server. I have a hard drive for different content of major stuff that I know is going to be something that people are going to want to go back to in like 30 years. But newscasts will be stored like online for a time. And I'm not sure how far back. I think they re-clear every year or two in the system, but they are stored in one of the servers.
That's got to be a big server though.
That room is immense.
Like an hour broadcast. That just seems like it'd be huge.
Yeah, it the file size is pretty large. And I don't go in that room. I stay away from that room because I'd be scared that I would break something in there and that would be the end of me.
Yeah, storage and all that is very expensive. Our broadcast, that'd be huge. It must be petabytes of data.
It's big. It's very, very big.
I mean, it must have used to have been like tapes and stuff. Are those still kicking around, or are they just
They are. Oh yeah, I have a closet full of them that Throck had saved with just classic sports stuff, that he thought would be important, and it has been. And we have a bunch of tapes from basically we didn't go fully digital until the early, I think it's 2012 is when we switched over. Mm-hmm. So, once that happened, we went away from tapes, but there's still like, you know, from 2000 to 2010, you know, even I think our archive of tapes started in like 2001. So there's a whole shelf of them in the newsroom.
Do you guys have like old broadcasts from like when you started saved, like back in the 50s?
Yeah, my news director has a file tape of some of the first shows, and they're in like a vault. And he has a bunch of, I have some old footage of when Maine went to the College World Series in like 1960, I want to say. It's all black and white, and it was like George Hale and like Wink when he was like not old at all. And like it was crazy. I'm not even sure like all of the details of that one, but we ran some footage from it. I found some 1960s like Brewer High football that we saved, which was pretty cool. But yeah, it goes back. There's a bunch that goes way back.
If they could figure out a way, they should create like a website where you could go and watch all the classic broadcasts from like the 50s and 60s and all that.
That'd be really cool. I don't know how we would do that, or even if we have like the full length. I would imagine that they have to have something, but it was so different then. It was, you know, it was even really different. You know, Brock used to tell me about the 80s where he would have one piece of video in his whole show. And it was kind of him talking about what's going on.
I feel like that would be a lot like trying to do art analysis on some piece of art that you just like do not care about. And like, so you're like trying to really overanalyze it to find like the tiniest little bits of things that you can write about it.
Yeah. The process to get video on the air has become so simple compared to even when I started that it's pretty spectacular. And you know, this generation's so lucky that easy.
Yeah.
So I actually got a question about the archives. Do you guys have like, I think they played it when, I forget his name again, but he had retired the Apollo 11 mission. You guys had reported on that back in the 60s or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you guys have that like full length broadcast?
I don't know. I know they have clips of it, but, I think that's also on the tape that's in the vault that can't be touched.
I'm assuming you guys probably have a broadcast from like Kennedy 63.
I'm not sure. I don't fully know. It, like I said, it's in a vault. You have to sign petition forms and stuff.
Oh, you do? So they don't let anybody look at it?
I'm being sarcastic.
Special clearance.
Yeah. You gotta talk to John Small, our news director, to see the tape.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty cool, though. History, you know, especially locally, just getting the reactions of local people for these like spectacular events that happen in mankind history. I think that's really cool. American history, all that. That's really cool.
Well, that's the point. I mean, to save that stuff so that people know what actually was happening at the time,
mm-hmm.
the best we could share it.
Yeah. I think they should do a classic website. That'd be really cool to check out, you know, watch all of those clips or post them on YouTube. I think that'd be cool as well.
Yeah.
So you were talking about how it's a lot easier to like broadcast now, live broadcast, from what it was before. How do they exactly broadcast? I know you probably, I don't know if you know it or not, but how do they, you know, get a show broadcasted?
I can give you a Cliff Notes version. We still have a satellite that shoots up to space and disperses to various cable outlets for people to access or get it our signal over the air. That's kind of the non-scientific method of it.
You said you're into sports a lot, and that makes sense why you do sports casting. What is your opinion on like the emerging esports? Is that just like ridiculous to you, or do you think that's something that's legitimately interesting or matters at all?
That's a good question. I it's weird to me. I see it as a competition, so I can get that, and it allows people to learn some of the values of sports.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I was pretty anti, and then, you know, some of the guys that are much younger than me that work over at like Channel 7 kind of explained to me some of it, and I've talked to the NPA about adding it. So they're adding that as a high school sport in the fall. And, you know, I think any chance that allows people to come together for a common goal and learn how to, you know, even if it's individual, they're working for a team. Mm-hmm. It teaches a lot of those values that are very important as you guys, or as anyone, goes through their daily life.
It's pretty amazing though. Like, you know, people wouldn't imagine this. I mean, it's debated if it's a sport or not. I read somewhere that they're going to have it in the Olympics or something, some sort of competition.
That is a little bit cool silly.
But it's pretty cool to hear that, like, these people, you know, the video game industry and, like, you know, the Call of Duty World Championships, you know, these young people are winning $10 million cash prizes. It's like, what the hell, you know? How did this happen, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, video games is a billions and billions of dollar industry now, and it is a way, you know, that people can compete, and now it's so connected through the internet that you can connect that way. It's just a different way of thinking about it.
Yeah. So how do other people at the station, you know, what do other people at the station think about that? You know, have you guys ever had conversations about doing full segments of it, you know, on your channel and all that?
I've run a couple stories because Thomas College has a team, and they're adding a team, or they're adding teams at high schools around here for the NPA to have it as a sport. And they are kind of on the fence. They kind of gave me some looks when I ran those in my sports cast.
So I actually had a question, turning the wheels here back. So do you guys broadcast your news to your website? Can you, like, go online and watch the broadcast live?
Yeah, we have a live stream of all of our shows. There's just a button on the top of our webpage that you can click on and hit play. And it just says live stream news, and it'll update with each show.
So do you guys get a lot of people watching it from the internet, or is it majority just from TVs?
I think that it's a little bit of both. I think a lot of the time the live stream is people that missed our news or missed something they wanted to see on our news. But also, like, some of us are from away, and it's a good way for our parents back home to be able to watch what we're doing.
A lot of the traditional way of looking at news broadcasts and all that is, like, a lot of traditional, you know, back in the, you know, people watch TV and everything else. Nowadays, the newer generations are more into the internet and everything else, you know, watching YouTube clips and stuff on Facebook, etc. You know, so I think that's always pretty cool when a company, you know, makes strides to go digital. I think that's pretty cool, especially locally. So like you said, so people away can hear what's going on. So do you guys use the same system to broadcast on the internet, or is it like a totally different thing?
I think we use SyncBack to capture and stream our news. At least that's how it was explained to me. I'm not really involved with that. That's our engineers. But it's a thing. It's something that I think a lot about because of what we were talking about earlier with the instant news, and like you were saying with YouTube and even Facebook Live, you know, just everything is instant now. It might come to a point where we have to figure out how to do it differently, where we just kind of do a cut in here and there of a 5-minute little blip in the middle of each hour or something.
So how many people does it take to assemble an entire news broadcast at Channel 5?
We have a lot of people. I think we probably have 20, 25 people that work different hours of the day. We have different shifts. You know, our morning crew gets in at, well, our producers for the morning get in when I'm going home at you know, midnight, and work through the morning. And our morning news anchors get in at 3 a.m. and work through the morning. And then our regular shift is a 9 to 6:30 shift for reporters and anchors and producers. And Then there's an evening shift, which is what I work, which is three to midnight. So,
do you ever get like really tired and exhausted from an entire day of preparing and all that?
I would tell you that I love the tournament, but it is exhausting because I care so much about product and I've gotten to know so many of the kids, and I want it to be as great as we can possibly make it. But I think I worked almost 80 hours the tournament week this year, and it's a lot.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's mad. You know, especially putting it in all that. So how much time are you spending like driving to these tournaments? Is that a lot of time?
No, not so much driving. It's the amount of time that you're there. And the amount of, it's such a big deal here in Maine that we put a lot of effort into it. We have it in every show. We try to be live as much as we can, and it's going to continue to, you know, develop, and everything's fluid and learning how to just continue to grow with modern expectations of, like I've been saying, instant. Everything's got to be quicker.
Do you think the ratio of like how impactful or insignificant your segments are has gone down over time? Well, maybe your dedication or the amount of time you have to spend doing or reporting has gone up over time. Do you think they have a correlation?
No, I don't know. I think, yeah, maybe like not really during since I've been working. I think before me, everyone just tuned to the news. So I see that you're saying that way, where, you know, everyone got their news only from the local news at night versus now, where it's pretty readily available throughout
the day. Might expect you local guys to do, you know, more.
They definitely expect us to do more with less. I think that's the
right
everywhere.
Because it seems like you're trying to make that point. And I'm, you know, I see that.
Yeah. I mean, I want our coverage to be what people want. I mean, at the end of the day, I work for the people of Maine to inform them what's going on. That's my job, and it's what they want to know. So I got to figure out what that is and deliver it the way that they want to get it. And the way I see it is I work for the people that watch our station.
Right.
That's pretty cool. That's a good way to put it.
Now a word from our sponsor.
Pretty cool, you know, how you started and everything else. It's a cool story. But yeah, I think that's it for the interview, at least. Thank you for coming on, Eric. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for inviting me on, guys. Nice to talk to you.
So thank you guys all for listening to this podcast, episode 32. Thank you, Eric, for coming on the show. It's it was great. It was great talking to you. It was great having this interview. Very insightful. I learned a lot of things that I didn't know about, you know, broadcasting and especially the local news and everything else. And I know Isaac and Birdie did as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, share this around if you enjoyed it. And I've been Gage.
I'm Isaac.
I'm Brody. Thank you for
Eric,
listening.
You can say you're Eric.
I'm Eric.
And this is it. We're signing off.
See you later. Day.